welcome to the Money Mile Podcast. I am your host, Justin Waller, and I am happy you are here. We like to think of Money Mile as standing at the corner of triathlon and personal finance, and we believe that age group triathletes are the lifeblood of our sport, and we want to shine the light on some good people doing great things. Today, we have a very special guest on Money Mile. Today, we are joined by Kathy Grady. Kathy has been involved in triathlons for more than 20 years. She is the age group winner of the Des Moines 70.3 and 24th overall female in the 2023 race year. She finished third in her age group at Oregon 70.3, and she is a tremendous athlete recovering from some significant medical challenges. In addition to that, she is also an extraordinary coach of a high-performing triathlon squad, coaching both youth and adults. We talk about several different facets of Kathy's triathlon career, and we had a great conversation. After our conversation with Kathy, we will be rolling out our first Questions on Course segment. In this segment, we will be tackling questions we receive from our audience and doing our best to give practical responses that everyone can learn from. This should not be viewed as specific advice for you, as I still likely don't know you from a hot rock, but I hope the conversation is still valuable for you. If you have signed up for the Money for the Long Run newsletter, you will have the show notes in your email inbox. For now, drop your shoulder blades into your back pockets, pick your eyes up, make sure you have a nice forward lean from the ankles, and listen up to this conversation with the one, the only, Kathy Grady. Kathy, welcome to Money Mile.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Kathy, we've had an opportunity to interact here a little bit just in getting things started here, but maybe you could start us off and tell us a little bit about how you got started in triathlon.
My first triathlon I did was back in 2004. I actually had a very good friend that I started swimming with back in 1990, and we just swam with a master swim program, and he'd been doing triathlon since probably like 1980 something. And he kept telling me, you really need to get into triathlons. And I'm like, no, I can't run. So I was always a biker, and grew up as a swimmer. One day at practice, one of the gals who I used to coach, because I was actually a swim coach before a triathlon coach, she mentioned that she was going to do a particular race in South Dakota. And I thought, oh, you know what? If she can do this, I'm going to do it too. So I signed up for it. Well, she backed out. And so thank goodness one of my good friends is training for Ragbri. That's a big bike ride across Iowa. So she came with me and just rode her bike while I was doing my race and stuff. And the swim went really good. The bike went really good. Well, I was not prepared for the run. And so when I finished, I looked at my friend and I said, never again. So anyways, I thought about it. She put me on a run program and did another race 3 weeks later, just a small race in South Dakota, and ended up winning it. And pretty much it's all history since then.
So just to make sure I got the timeline right there. The first race, you had a little bit of a tough time on the run. The second race, you won.
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure I was clear.
Yes. Okay. I never really followed any program. Like the little bit of running I did was just with my dog. And so, like I said, she put me on a 3 day a week where I was doing track workouts. Back then, my long run was like 3 to 5 miles. I mean, I seriously thought that was a long run. So with anything, you just got to be consistent doing it. And that was the thing is, you know, when I first started, I was not a consistent runner. It was like just periodically and stuff. So I've learned a lot in this will be my 20th year competing in triathlon. So like I always tell my athletes, every race you do, it's a learning experience. I mean, you should go back and look at your results and look at what did I do good? What can I do better next time? Because there's always something you can work on to improve.
Agreed. I think there is a lot of benefit from looking back at previous experiences and looking at how far you've progressed. In my personal views, I think there's a little bit less benefit from comparing yourself to other athletes, because there are a lot of phenomenal athletes out there. But if you compare yourself to how you used to be, chances are you can find a lot of really good wins and a lot of good experiences in there and a positive motivation moving forward. If you compare yourself to others, it's an easy way to get down on yourself and, oh, there's always somebody faster, better, stronger, whatever. But looking at how you used to be, I think is a great way to to gauge success moving forward. So speaking of success, I've found that success means different things to different people, and sometimes at different times in their life that can change. So how are you defining success these days?
I think it's just things change as you get a little bit older, you know? So you really got to start thinking about other things than just your training. You got to think about other things, you know, the sleep, the nutrition, all the other stuff that needs to be done to help make you successful. And just who you surround yourself with. Like some people, they may never get on the podium when they're racing, but you know what? They're out there doing that. And so for them, success is, you know what? Completing a race, doing something like, I always use my sister as my inspiration because we both did our first Ironman last year and the cutoff is 17 hours and she just made the cutoff and she's like, why are you telling people that? I said, because you know what? You finished. And that's huge because a lot of people don't finish. So I said, I'm not putting you down. I said, I'm proud of you. Yeah, because 99% of the population are not outdoing what you just did. So yeah, I mean, like I said, as you get older, I think success does change. I mean, winning is still super important to me, but you know, just the connections I've made in this sport have really just defined my life and, you know, as a triathlon coach and just the kids I influence and everything. So I still like to win and I'm hoping I'm back racing again. So anyways.
So speaking of, you had a great race at the Oregon 70.3 this year, finishing third in your age group. So congratulations on that performance. That's fantastic. Can you tell us a little bit about how you prepared for that race and how you felt crossing the finish line?
Because I knew I had an injury coming on probably mid-May. So I did a couple of sprint races in April and May, and it just progressively got worse. I was training for the Des Moines 70.3. half Ironman, and just a couple days before that race, I went in to see the doctor, and she's like, you probably got something wrong, but we'll do an MRI after the race. And so I did Des Moines 70.3, did really well, won my age group, and I think I was 24th overall finisher. So super happy with that race, just because, like I said, my knee has been bothering me. And then after that race, had an MRI, ended up with a deep bone bruise. So my doctor recommended that I stay off it for 4 weeks. And I'm like, oh, I have Oregon coming up in 7 weeks. And she's like, you either stay off of it or you're going to have a stress fracture. And I'm like, okay. So I really, this is probably one of the first races I have gone into under trained, because I'm usually very consistent about making sure I'm getting in, you know, my 3 to 4 swims a week, for sure 4 bikes a week. And for sure, I mean, my run, I usually am running up to at least 11 miles in my training program. The farthest I ran, because I was only allowed to actually run 2 weeks for Oregon, was 6 miles. And so I'm like, okay, please just let me get through this race. So I did see the doctor before the race. She did give me a cortisone injection just to hopefully help my knee a little bit. So yeah, I'm just starting the Oregon race, and it's a phenomenal race. That's why I'm excited to hopefully race it again this next year. Jumping off the dock, I felt something pop in my knee and I thought, oh, that can't be good. So my plan was just to finish the swim, maybe attempt to do the bike, see how that goes. Well, just because I've never not finished a race, I started the run and I thought, well, this is okay. But by mile 7, it wasn't okay. So I'm just very thankful I was able to cross that finish line. Yeah, even at the award ceremony, I told my good friend who was with me, I said, I don't even know how I can even walk back to the hotel, because I was in a lot of pain. But yeah, absolutely beautiful course. My sister, who is probably my biggest cheerleader supporter, I do races. She is actually signed up for Oregon again, or for this year also. So that's kind of the big reason I want to go back and do Oregon again.
Excellent. So can you tell us a little bit about the injury and kind of how things have evolved with your knee since then?
So, well, when I got back from Oregon, I met with my doctor again, did another MRI. So sure enough, it's become a stress fracture on the opposite side of my knee. So, and she's like, you need to get off this knee for sure, or you will end up needing a knee replacement. And I'm like, okay, so I was pretty much on crutches for about 8 weeks, attempted to come off crutches for about 9 days, and then just sharp shooting pain, had another MRI. Doctor's like, well, okay, you got bone on bone. We could give you an injection of, I don't even know what it's called, Synvec or whatever. He said, but what we're just doing is a Band-Aid right now. And so he's like, you know, your best option is we could probably do a partial knee replacement, knowing that you might need a complete knee replacement. I'm like, I just told him too from the get-go. I said, my goal is to run. I am signed up for a race and my goal is to run again. And even just, I just came back from PT just right before this. And that's one thing my physical therapist has talked to me about. So I'm 5 weeks post-surgery and actually doing very well. So I asked her when I could start running and she's like, well, we need to talk to the doctor. And she's like, is he on the same page as you? And I said, yes. He knew my plan was before the surgery, after surgery to run again, even though he's like, it's not recommended. So hopefully that's something that will happen. My therapist said here in South Dakota where I'm going, they've never actually had somebody with a knee replacement come back to running. But she said, if anybody can do it, it will be me. So really, I'm like, going, okay, you're not giving me confidence by telling me that. Yeah, I just really hope, like I said, my plan is because I feel like I still have a lot of years left to give this sport, especially when I'm coaching. The kids I coach, they're usually from ages 6 all the way up to high performance athletes. I'm out on the bike with them. I'm running with them. I mean, I'm a very active coach with them. I'm not somebody, until this past summer was really tough because I was on crutches. So I ended up having to be in my car and watching them and relying on my assistant coaches. So I'm just hoping to get back to doing what I love doing.
Well, we certainly wish you a speedy recovery from here and agree based on what you've shared so far. If anybody can pull that off, it's going to be you. So we'll look forward to hearing how things progress from here. So if your race or if the plan is to race Oregon again, I believe that's mid-July. Is that right?
Correct. I think July 22nd. Yep.
Okay. So from the time we're recording this, you've still got another 6 months or so recovery time to work up to that. So lots of time there. The body will do what the body does. And we certainly wish you the best with that recovery cycle and hope everything goes well from here.
Yeah. Thank you.
We like to think of Money Mile as standing at the intersection of triathlon and personal finance. So what would you say has been the best investment in the form of time, energy, or money that you've made in your athletic career?
Definitely having a good bike shop to work with. So I've got a phenomenal bike shop here in Sioux Falls that has always taken care of all my biking needs. Like I always tell people when they first start doing triathlons to not invest a lot of money until you are committed. And so when I first started, I was doing, for the first 2 years, I raced on just a road bike that I just bought from a friend for $75. And then I finally invested in another actual road bike that I thought was a lot of money back then for, I think it was like $500, which back then seemed like a lot of money. And then when I raced at the qualified for the best of the U.S. and myself, and I think it's a gal from Rhode Island, we're the only two with not on a tri bike. And I thought, oh, I got to get one of those. And so I actually bought a used one from a really good friend. And then this one gal beat me in a race on a felt bike. And ever since then, I've always been a felt person. I love my felt bike. I was kind of upgrading about every couple of years my felt bike, but I'm almost at the point where my bike shop's like, you already have the best bike. Well, we really don't need to upgrade it too much more. So I think what I always kind of tell people, you know, it is nice to have a nice bike, but it still is the engine behind the bike. It's the consistent training. I always say if they would make shoes that would make you faster, which they kind of have now with a lot of those carbon plated shoes. I'm like, I would buy the speed, you know, because it's nice to buy speed. But talking about the bike, the big thing is, you know, having a good bike fit. I think I'm at the point where I just got to listen to my body and be consistent with my training now. But there are a lot of fun toys out there that I'd like to buy.
There are definitely lots of toys out there. There are definitely lots of marketers out there trying to get triathlete dollars. Doesn't necessarily mean it'll make you faster. You might look a little cooler. There's definitely that. But one of the things that I would like to highlight in there, just because it's kind of been in alignment with my philosophy and the way that I've looked at it over the years, is I think the bike fit is much more important at the entry level than the bike. If you're riding a bike that doesn't fit you, it's not going to be comfortable. And that's a quick way to say, oh, hey, that was miserable. I don't want to do that anymore. But if you can get a decent bike and have it fit to you well, you can make a lot of progress and ride for a really long time. But before you necessarily feel obligated, obligated to get the next super bike or anything like that. But I think that bike fitting component is something that a lot of people miss, and they jump from the, you know, the basic entry level bike to a super bike. And maybe that still doesn't fit them right. But for $100 or a couple hundred dollars, that bike fit can bring a lot of comfort and a lot more efficient effort as an athlete. Would you agree?
Yes, I agree 100%. I mean, bike fits are huge because, like you mentioned, you can buy the super expensive tri bike, but if it does not fit you, it's not going to do any good for you. You're going to hate it. You're going to hate to be in aero position. Yeah, so no, bike fit is huge. And the thing is, once you have one bike fit, because like I said, this is my 20th year racing, you almost need to have a bike fit. I'm not going to say every year, but every few years, your flexibility changes. I mean, everything, for sure, if you get a different bike, you need to have one. But yeah, it's something that you should just plan on investing, I'd say every 2 to 3 years.
That sounds great, Kathy. I definitely agree with that. So what would you consider to be the most underrated aspect of triathlons, or something you think that triathletes should know more about?
Oh, boy. Yeah, once again, I always come back to those fourth and fifth discipline of a triathlon, you know, sleep. Sleep is just huge. And that's one thing I'm always reminding my athletes. You know what? You know, if you're staying up till midnight and trying to get up at, you know, 4 a.m. and do swim workouts, you're not going to do your body any good. And then that comes hand in hand with like nutrition. I mean, that's just a huge part of being an all-around triathlete is, you know, you just got to make sure you're doing these little things that's going to keep you healthy, keep your body going. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm just a big pusher of that. And plus mentally too, I mean, I'm kind of big, I have my sports psychology degree. So I'm always a big proponent of just mental, you know, how your attitude affects your racing and training also.
You had mentioned a little bit in there about some of the work that you do with other athletes, and you're obviously coaching at a high level. And I was doing a little bit of digging before our conversation and ran across some of the accolades online, some of the results that you're doing. Could you tell us a little bit about the training that you're doing now for others, and specifically, I'm curious about the youth training program and how you're running that at this point?
So I work for a health club in Sioux Falls, the Sanford Wellness Center. And I think I started my youth tri program back in about 2011, maybe. It's crazy just how much triathlon has just exploded in mainly Sioux Falls. I guess I don't really fit much in the outside of Sioux Falls, but it's just my program has continued to grow. And a lot of my athletes, I will start them at 7 years of age. Like, couple of my gals are actually just got scholarships to go race for University of Arizona, and they are athletes I started coaching when they were 9 years old. So it's pretty exciting to see these guys where they started at and where they've gone, and especially for a lot of my female athletes, because before when you were doing this, it was just, you know what, it was something fun to do and stuff, but now you can actually get scholarships and go to college and do this, which is super, super exciting. You know, and I wish that the men had the same opportunity, which they do. I mean, they have clubs and stuff, but it's a super exciting time for female athletes. But yeah, like I said, my ages, I usually start with 7. Sometimes I've had them, like I have started at 5. It just really depends on, they need to know how to swim. That's the big thing. And whenever I refer to these kids, I always call them like my kids, even though they're not my kids, but you spend so much time with these kids that you hope, you know, not only are you teaching them just the fundamentals of, you know, triathlons, racing, but also just to be, you know, all around good people. And that's what I actually have. It's so funny too, because a lot of my athletes, well, not a lot, but 3 of them right now who were my young ones who started at 9, who are now 17, 18, they actually work for me because I'm an aquatic supervisor. It's my main job, and then also triathlon coach. And so they lifeguard for me, and they're actually my assistant coaches, which is really fun to see when I look back at where they started. And now they're these high performance athletes that all these young athletes look up to. But yeah, it's just, I love coaching the kids. They're just super fun. Never a dull moment with them. My adults, a lot of times my high performance kids, so my high performance kids are race age 13 and above. So once they get to be that age, they actually get to train with my adult program. And it's so funny because sometimes the adults look at these kids like, how do you put up with these guys? Because they're just so they're talking all the time when you're trying to talk, and they're your typical teenagers and stuff. So I always have to remind myself, you know what? They are teenagers, and they're just a lot of fun to train.
From a professional standpoint, your day job, if you will, is working at the health club. And then as a part of that, you run the triathlon training program and the aquatic center there. Did I put those together correctly? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like an amazing opportunity and alignment of forces over years. So I'm really glad that you have the opportunity to do that. You've obviously gotten some great results out of the program and how you're running that. So kudos to you. Just out of curiosity, about how many athletes are you coaching at this point?
I think with my kids, I had around 45 last summer. And then for my adults, you know, after COVID hit, the adult program has kind of dropped a little bit. So when we're not actually in our tri training, because a lot of times, like in our off season, like October through December, and then we just start again in January, what I do is I offer a master swim program and a youth swim program. So that's kind of what we're doing right now. And then I won't even start because in the Midwest, it's so cold. I used to try to start my tri program for my adults beginning of April, but now I actually am running my swim program until end of May. And then we start tri training beginning June. But what's so fun is even though my adult program has kind of dropped down a little bit, I'm getting new adults to my swim program because they're all still starting triathlons and getting interested in stuff. So I'm glad to see, because for a while there, I was like, Jesus, triathlon kind of started to kind of die down a little bit. And especially, like I said, after COVID, it really, where my youth program just exploded during COVID, my adults just kind of dwindled down. So I'm really excited with my program right now that I'm seeing a lot of new adults coming to, because the swim is always the weakest component for, I'd say, 90% of triathletes. But yeah, I think my adult program, I probably have around 15. I used to have in the, you know, mid 20s to 30. So not huge, but I don't have a lot of coaches. So pretty much I'm the one at all the practices and stuff. So I know we could probably even grow my program even more, but I don't have the space and I don't have myself personally. I can't do it. So yeah, I get a lot of interest. A lot of emails from people going, oh, I've heard about your program. I want to get my child into it. Yeah, I hate ever putting a cap on a program, but unfortunately, that's kind of where I'm at this point. But yeah, usually about around 50 total is about 50 to 60 is my max.
Well, that is a lot higher than I thought you were going to say. Juggling 50 athletes in general, much less a bunch of youth athletes. And we all, you know, appreciate the challenge that might come along with that. Kudos to you for all the work that you're putting in there. It's obviously bearing fruit in your area and in the triathlon community as a whole, spreading the awesomeness of triathlon across collegiate level athletes and whatnot across the country. So thank you for that work and congratulations for all the successes that you're having.
Thank you.
What would you consider to be the biggest mistake or a problem that you've run into while training or racing for you individually?
Not stopping when my body tells me to.
I think we were just talking about that, weren't we?
Yeah, that's probably my biggest, because like I said, I've never DNF'd the race. I did have to finally, because my goal was to get through Oregon, get through age group nationals, and then figure out what was going on with my knee. So this is the first time ever I could not participate in age group nationals. So pretty sad about that. But yeah, over the course of the years, I've had a few injuries that I continue to just push through. And then it develops into a much worse injury than it probably would have been. So that's probably my biggest mistake and I'm such a competitive person. And even just right now, you know, being 5 weeks post-surgery and my physical therapist is trying to say, okay, what's the plan for this weekend? What are you going to do? And she's telling me I can bike for 30 minutes. Or maybe start with 25 and then maybe go 30. And I'm like, but she goes no more than that. I'm like, seriously? So I'm just somebody who I'm so used to training, you know, 2 to 3 hours a day. And for her to tell me, you know, I can only walk on my treadmill for 20 minutes and at 3.5, I'm like, are you kidding me? So yeah, that's probably the hardest thing is just, you know, having injuries and not listening to your body so that you can heal properly and hopefully continue doing what you like doing.
All right. So for those in the community that that are listening to this, I just like to make sure that we're all clear here. A very high performing individual athlete, high performing that it's coaching high performing athletes. The recommendation here is listen to your body. And if you're feeling something, come on, you got to be open to taking some time off. You got to be able to let your body recover. While we are typically high-performing, go-getter type folks, sometimes you need to let your body recover. Am I getting that right?
You are 100% correct. And you know what? That is what I preach to my athletes. But unfortunately, I don't take my own advice.
Yes, I can appreciate the concern there. Sometimes that can be hard, especially when this is part of how we identify as people. This is who we are. It is such a big part of our identity. It's hard to just put that on a shelf and say, oh, well, I guess I'm just going to not, when it's a whole lot easier for other folks. I'm sure that if your physical therapist told other folks, we need you to walk on a treadmill for 20 minutes, they'd look at that as like, oh my gosh, why do I have to do that? And you're thinking of it as, that's all? That's it? That's all I can do? So it's that different perspective. It's a big part of who we are. And I'm sure there's probably some nuggets in there in that sports psychology component of kind of how we might be able to look at that. But maybe we'll save that for another conversation. So has there been in your athletic career a turning point for you in regards to your training? And if so, what did that really look like for you?
Yeah, probably before I moved back to Sioux Falls. I actually lived in Omaha for a couple of years. And that was probably the big turning point, because I was back in 2008. So like I mentioned, I started racing in 2004. And then when I moved to Omaha in 2008, I started working for a couple health clubs down there. And they were really wanting to get a triathlon program going. And I thought, okay, sure, I'll do that. So I got just my online certification and started a program there working with, I don't even know, I think I had probably 15 athletes at that time. And it was strictly all adults. I didn't do any kids down there. So just getting that certification, the online, and I think it was the International Triathlon Coaching Association that I first got. And then I moved back to Sioux Falls in 2010 and got involved with the Z3 triathlon team, which is actually based out of Des Moines. We have a whole bunch of satellite locations all over the place, and I'm the head coach for the Sioux Falls program. And I actually got my USAT triathlon certification like in 2013, I think it was. But just having that certification now and just coaching people, writing programs and stuff, that has definitely made me a better triathlete. Because like I said before, like when I first started in 2004, I was just doing hodgepodge training. I was like, you know, periodically I'd go do, you know, a couple bike rides and do whatever. You know, I was never following a consistent, progressive program. And so that's been really huge for me over the years. And what I tell people is really fun. So I'm 58 now. And I do a lot of the same races. South Dakota has a lot of the same, like, 9 races that we were doing a series. I am still PRing in these races at my age, which is pretty exciting. And I've been the overall female winner in South Dakota. Still, I mean, this last year, I didn't race any South Dakota races because of my injuries. But the year before, I'm still, I hate to use the word beating, you know, these 18, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds and stuff, because I'm still getting faster, which is just very exciting to see at my age, because a lot of people think, oh, you know what, you hit that whatever and you're going to start slowing down. So I'm hoping that, because I haven't run since July 23rd, everybody's like, why do you remember that date? Because that was Oregon. Anyways, I'm just hoping, because what actually had major knee surgery 10 years ago, my meniscus, I had completely reattached, couldn't do anything for 4.5 months. Came back actually stronger after that. I did, because, you know, and sometimes we think a break is good for you because you do come back stronger and stuff. So I'm hoping age-wise, I'm not limited, but it's something, as long as you are consistently following a program, and it can't just be, you know, like you said, I used to put on a race in South Dakota here too. And we always just prayed everybody got out of the swim. That was the biggest thing, you know, it's just you've got 100 and some people going in the lake. Please let 100 and some people come out of the lake. So many people just assume, oh, it's only a 500. I can do a 500. Well, no, you can't. If you've never done it, you need to be training, and you need to be training consistently. You can't just try it once and go, oh, I can do this, you know. So like I said, I keep coming back to that consistency, but that is just huge. You need to make sure that The two sports I never stop doing unless I'm injured are swimming and running. I mean, all year round, I might back off in the off season. Biking, I say, yeah, you can definitely take time off the bike because you can usually come that when you can definitely come back pretty good on. But I probably never take more than 8 weeks off on a bike. So consistency in training is going to be your secret to success.
That's fantastic. And the fact that you are still PRing races, or that you had been still continuing to PR races at this point in your career, is a testament that you are doing something right. So keep up the good work, and hopefully others in our community are going to look towards that consistency and look to continue to improve over time. If you only had $100 to spend on triathlon gear, what would you buy?
Oh, I think I'd put socks. Good pair of socks. Because, you know, if you're $100, you're like, okay, can't really get a pair of shoes. Can't really get a helmet. Well, maybe you could get a helmet. But yeah, probably just good clothing items. Because I guess the reason I thought socks is socks are huge when it comes to running. I mean, some people still run in cotton socks. And I'm like, oh, how do you do that? That's, you're going to end up with blisters. So probably 20 years ago, I probably could have bought a lot more of that $100 than what I could today. I'm excited to buy an athletic shirt for $100 now.
Well, I know that there are members of our community that wouldn't think twice about dropping several hundred dollars on whatever it is, whatever gadget or gizmo doodad that they might, the next purchase that they might want to make. But there are other people in our community that $100 is a little bit more meaningful in thinking about, you know, what is the investment that you would make with that? And I've heard different things over the last several months. Some say, if I only had $100, I would enter another race because the more experience for the race is the most valuable thing that I can do. One of the interesting comments that I thought you had made earlier was around the shorts. In my world, that's a big thing. Having quality bike shorts, you can get a pretty decent pair of shorts. This is not something you want to skimp on, especially, you know, if you're at a sprint distance, it's one thing, but if you're at a longer distance race, you're going to be on that bike for a while. You want to be wearing some quality gear. So that's going to be a much more comfortable experience for you, training and racing. I would agree with that. I happen to be one of those cotton sock guys. So maybe I need to invest in some better socks. I'll have to look into that. Do you have a particular recommendation of what you like to run in?
They really kind of changed because they keep changing socks. Kind of like they kept changing shoes, like Asics. I used to run the Asics and they kept changing shoes. I do just like some Bombas has some really good ones. Gosh, I don't know. I just kind of always try to look for a pair that's not too thick just because you don't want to bunch up. When I do race, I usually don't wear socks for like sprints and Olympic distance. Obviously anything above that I do wear, but when I'm training, I always wear socks. One thing I kind of thought about when you said, you know, what would you buy? And when I first started out with triathlon, and still too, you can actually get some good stuff used. Well, you don't have to actually, like, probably a bike computer. Like I said, even though my power meter, I love having it, even though I don't utilize it like I should, just to watch your speed, your cadence, things like that. Like, you can get a pretty good bike computer definitely for under $100.
I would agree. I think that's another great aspect. And cadence is really important. And you can go out there and ride for a long time and not know the difference. If you start to become more aware of what you're doing and the relative perceived effort at a certain cadence, at a certain gearing, you can get a better context for what works for you and what doesn't. That is a great suggestion. I have not heard before here on the podcast. So yeah, that's another great thing to look at. I am also curious, from your perspective, the career that you've had over the decades, what is it that you would most like the world to know about you and your journey in triathlon?
Oh, boy, that is always a journey. The people that I have met since I have started to do triathlon, particularly adults that I've coached, they've become my lifelong friends. And before I started, became a triathlon coach, I was strictly just an aquatic person. That's all I did. I taught swimming lessons, water aerobics, things like that. And then once I got my triathlon certification, I think my whole world really changed also. And just when I started doing triathlon, like I said, you're going to meet some amazing people, whether you train with them. And it's so nice to actually be training with people too, by the way. So, I mean, I would highly recommend if there's any way that you are near somewhere that has a club team to get involved with that, because you're more apt to show up for a workout if you know somebody's there waiting to do it, then if you know, you can easily talk yourself out of something. So But yeah, so like I said, probably just the people I have met over the 20 years I have been coaching. Who you surround yourself with is kind of how you define how you're going to be successful also. And, you know, my family's just been huge. I mean, I can't tell you how many times that I've had to go out and get a training ride in or something, and I kind of missed some things with them, but they've always been very supportive of my racing career. So yeah, it's a journey. It's one that, like I said, I'm really glad I didn't decide after that very first race in 2004, because like I said, I crossed that finish line and I said, never again. I had cramps in places I didn't even know you could cramp on the run. The run was horrible. And I still got fourth overall, I think, for females, but it was horrible. And so I'm glad I didn't at that point do that one race and say, oh gosh, I'm done, because my life would be so much different than it is now. Because like I said, traveling has really just opened up a whole nother world for me. And especially with the coaching has just been just really huge. And it's something I greatly enjoy doing. Hopefully I'm doing it, like I said, I'm 58, but I'm hoping to coach for still quite a few years.
That's great, Kathy. And we certainly hope you continue to do great coaching work for the next couple of decades. That would be great. You're certainly having a wonderful impact on the sport. And I, for one, appreciate all of the efforts that you put in. I recognize it is part of your job, but you're absolutely contributing to our community. And I appreciate the work you're doing.
Thank you.
I would like to give you the floor and give you an opportunity to share a little bit more about what you have going on in the world. I know you're doing coaching, you're doing all this stuff. I don't know if you're still taking on other clients at large or whatever. And so would you kind of give you the floor, and if other people want to learn more about what you're doing, how you're doing it, how they might be able to follow you.
So yeah, like I kind of already mentioned, because I'm aquatic supervisor at the Sanford Wellness Center. I'm actually in charge of two aquatic facilities I just took on in August. So that's been a little bit more time consuming also. And we only ever take our one and only break is between that end of August, and then we start again the end of October. So I have like 8 weeks that I'm not coaching, which is kind of my catch up time a little bit and stuff. But then right now, like I said, I'm involved in coaching the Master Swim program, which is my adults 18 and above. And then my youth swim program, which is usually 7 years of age all the way up to, you know, I've got 16, 17 year olds doing that program. And then we will be starting here pretty quickly. Probably I'm going to start at the end of this month, my high performance tri program for my kids race age 13 and above. Because this year, nationals for our kids used to be always the first weekend in August, and they actually moved it to July 11th and 12th now. And so the race season is actually starting pretty quick here. So I'll be going the end of February, heading down to Claremont, Florida. Z3 also has a team down in Florida. So the Florida coach, her and I will be coaching down in Claremont, Florida, and then we'll put on a triathlon camp for our high-performance kids, a three-day triathlon camp. After that, I'll be heading down to Fort Worth, Texas in April. There's a brand-new high-performance race that's going to be going on down there. So I'll be taking a bunch of kids racing down there. And then we've got a race in Richmond, Virginia. We got one in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Then we got one in Pennsylvania, and then we have Hoot National. And so it's going to come really quick. So I told the parents, like, registration actually opens this weekend for the Texas race. And once things get rolling, the season's going to go by super fast. So that's kind of what my life is. I'm scheduling lifeguards, trying to keep two pools going. And then plus I'm writing training programs for my high performance kids. I'm coaching my youth swim, my master swim. So it's quite busy.
Yes, it sounds like it. So it sounds like the majority of the work that you're doing is hands-on training. They're at the center. So if there happens to be a listener or two of the Money Mile community in this, it's Sioux Falls, correct, is where you're at?
Correct. Yep.
And they happen to have a youth interested in triathlon, or themselves might be interested in some of that master's work that you're doing, how would they best contact you? What would be the best way for them to connect?
So they could just email me at my work email address, which is just Kathy, K-A-T-H-Y dot Grady, G-R-A-D-Y, at sanfordhealth.org. Because, yeah, I have coached people remotely also. And I know just with my master's program, too, I mean, we do have people. I got a couple of people who drive over an hour each way to come to swim programs. Because there's just a lot of towns around do not have pools. So they drive to come to my program, which is kind of cool.
Well, that's great. And so if we are doing our job correctly here, the folks who are listening to this are probably out on their long, steady run. So we'll include all of the reference notes there, the email address and all that stuff in the show notes so they can reference back to that. With that, Kathy, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate all the contributions you're making to our community and sharing a little bit of time with us today here at the Money Mile. Any other thoughts or parting words you'd like to share with our group before we let you go?
No, just keep doing what you're doing. And yeah, like I said, I mean, triathlon, it's a way of life. It's something that hopefully people can do all the way into their 90s. So yeah, just be consistent. And just like I said, just try to stay involved with a group of people because, yes, it's a wonderful community to be part of.
Thanks again to Kathy Grady for coming on the show. We really appreciate her time and all the knowledge that she shared. I hope you found this conversation valuable. And now on to our questions on course segment. A question I received recently is, I am doing a lot financially and I'm feeling some frustration about not seeing the progress fast enough. What can I do? Well, sometimes we need to be careful about financial burnout. Now, we're all familiar with the triathlon burnout, and it is especially easy to experience this if you are training for long distance triathlon and perhaps not seeing the results you'd like to see. But you can burn out financially as well. It's pretty similar. You can get burned out and even stop doing what would otherwise be a good plan, even if you are doing the right things. You know, patience here can be really important. Just like following a well-thought-out training plan can be frustrating at times, we have to be confident in our path, and sometimes you just have to put in the reps. I also recognize who I'm talking with here, so let's talk about some practical steps to help prevent this or help to identify what some things are that you can do from here. First, I would suggest that you want to verify that you're still motivated by the goal that you're shooting for. Now, sure, you may have once been super pumped about living on rice and beans so you could be financially independent by the time you turned 40. But if you're getting frustrated, you should verify that the goal you are setting for yourself is still important for you. You might be able to look at it and say, well, maybe I want to be financially independent by 50, and that'll give you a lot more breathing room. Or you can change the amount that you want to have as the goal. So you can look at a lot of different things to give yourself some flexibility. The second thing is that you want to verify the strategy that you're using. You want to make sure that you understand the strategy you're following to reach the particular goal. So saving strategies, tax strategies, investment strategies, distribution strategies, they all take time to bear fruit. And it's pretty rare that we see an overnight success in the finance world. So sometimes it just might take time. Let's take a step back, verify that you're doing the right stuff, and that will help improve your confidence in what you're doing. If you have questions, there are thousands of ways to do things. So if you want to pivot a little bit or change your strategy a little bit to make it a little bit more interesting for you, that's fine. You just want to make sure that you're still headed in the right direction. The third suggestion is to give yourself some breathing room. If you're frustrated with a perceived lack of progress, this often comes as a result of sacrifices you are making and not seeing the results that you want. So thinking about the trade-offs that you make on a regular basis, you can look at if an adjustment might be beneficial to you. So a good example of this in the triathlon world is nutrition. So you might get overly focused on one particular aspect of the nutrition side of things and makes you regret what you're doing. The example that I thought of was that if you have given up donuts so that you can race the most effective way that you can, A, that would be a hard deal in my house, but if you had decided that you were going to give up donuts, but now you're regretting that decision and every morning you kick yourself for making that decision, you still have options. You probably didn't make a lifelong commitment to a donut-free lifestyle, although it might feel that way at the moment, so you can consider changing things up a bit. For example, make your favorite donut part of your next post-race fueling strategy. Yes, yes, I know, it's not super clean carbs and protein that might be an ideal fit, but if it helps keep you motivated and helps you pushing through mile 10 of your half marathon and a 70.3 to think about that apple fritter or whatever it is on the other end of the finish line, then awesome. If it keeps you going, go for it. I don't know that anyone's nutrition plan has ever been derailed by one donut. And if it keeps you motivated, I'm happy. Likewise, if you have given up going to the movies so you can save $1,000 a month to reach your financial goal, consider giving yourself a treat if you reach certain interim goals.
financial independence 5 to 30 years from now, or college planning or whatever it might be a long way to wait to go to the movies. So if it's important to you, give yourself a short-term attainable goal that will help spark your motivation and reward yourself with a trip to see a movie at the theater. For this example, if you set a goal to save $12,000 a year, as soon as you reach that goal, give yourself a bit of a breather and go out to see a great movie at the theater. Maybe even splurge for popcorn. I know it's expensive these days, but by golly, you've earned it. Then you get to reset your goal for the next year. I'm not saying that you now start going out to the movies every other night, but you get to reward yourself for reaching that certain goal and then reset that goal for the next year. It's a lot better to reward yourself periodically than get burned out and stop saving altogether. Lastly, if none of this is working for you, I would suggest reaching out to your friendly neighborhood financial planner to get a second opinion or refresh your perspective. When I was preparing for this segment, it reminded me of a great book I read a little while back called Happy Money: The Science of Happier Spending by Elizabeth Dunn and Michael Norton. I am such a big fan of this book and the way that Elizabeth and Michael have approached the topic that if you are interested in learning more about this, I would be willing to send a copy of this book to the first 5 people that request one. If you are one of those folks, or if you're interested in this, please email me your physical mailing address to info@wallerfc.com, and I will shoot out a copy of that book for you. I'm a big fan of their work, and I hope you find it valuable. Speaking of valuable, I hope this segment and this episode of Money Mile has been valuable for you. And if it was, please share the podcast with your training buddies and friends. Keep in mind that if you work out, everything else will too. And we'll look forward to talking with you next time on Money Mile.